Okay.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, and welcome to Transpositive. Tonight on Transpositive, we're going to be talking about trans labor and social justice issues. And so we've got a really exciting show. My name is Emma Lugo. I am one of the hosts.
I'm Aidan Vargas, and I am a co-host.
Great. Well, we are so welcome to have you. Have everyone here on Transpositive tonight. We've got a full show going on. We're going to be talking with Brooklyn Clark. Brooklyn is, why don't you tell us about the Brooklyn Clark interview, Aidan?
It was actually really great. You know, I've never met her before, and she actually had me go to her house, to her place to do it. And I felt like I was meeting an old friend. She was, she's very, very active in the community and has all these projects going on. And that I think that they're going to be good tools. She has good advice for our community and for, you know, the employment crisis that we're experiencing due to all the tax coming from 45. So that it's going to be a very good show.
Oh, great. Okay. Sorry, I heard you just fade in there a little bit stronger than you were before. So that's going to be an interview with Brooklyn Clark. We'll have on in about 8 minutes. And then we're going to be playing a song by one of the members of our collective. Maybe you could tell us about that, Aidan.
Yeah, this is a project that I've been working on for quite a while. And it's a very energetic song, kind of like the type of song that you want to listen to if you feel down or if you're like, you know, doing chores around the house. It's very upbeat, like to work out too. But it also has a very powerful message. And the video for it is going to be published or released on September 9th, which is the same day that I'm giving an LGBT presentation for medical Spanish interpreters so that they can learn how to better help Latin patients.
How did you get into this kind of production, Aidan? Because I've seen your work online before. I know you've got a YouTube page. You're doing a lot of production right now. How did you get into that?
Well, in October, I almost died. I had an ulcer that poisoned my blood with like 3 different bacteria because there was a hole in my stomach. When I came out of the hospital, I'd been doing activism for a while, but not like full-time. When I came out of the hospital after I recovered, I found a part-time job for a little bit, and then I quit that, and I've been doing this full-time ever since. So that's how it started. I felt like I had to do something more. You know, I was really, really close to dying, and so this gave me the energy to do what I do today.
Oh, that's great. And then after that, we're going to be talking to Andrea Haverkamp. Andrea is another labor specialist, someone who understands a lot about trans labor issues. So that's going to be after our interview with Brooklyn. And then finally, to close the show out tonight, we're going to be talking to Becca Blackwell, who is giving the West Coast premiere of her program, They, Themselves, and Shmerp, which is part of the Frontier series. It's part of Pika's art showcase that's coming up this week. And They, Themselves, and Shmerm deals with themes of gender and transition, strategies of humor, and forms of comedy and personal narrative. So we'll be talking
that
with...
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, we'll be talking with Becca. They are in New York on the East Coast. So that'll be at the end of the show. Let me just check with our engineer real quick and see if we're queued up and ready to go with the Brooklyn Clark interview. Okay, great. Well, why don't we just jump right into that? You had an interview with Brooklyn Clark just this last week. Brooklyn, I know, had a big protest down at Boley about 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn and Alyssa Pagan, who has also been on Kibu many times, fighting for trans justice and for trans rights. So let's go to that interview with with Brooklyn Clark.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I am a transgender woman of color. My name is Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. When I was in about third or fourth grade, I moved with my mother. She was a single woman. At that time, she had 3 kids. I have 4 siblings by my mother. I have 7 by my father. So I remember wanting to be an adult and be on my own. so that I could be myself. I felt very restricted and confined. I felt like the black sheep of the family, never really understood or loved. And I was physically, verbally, emotionally abused by my mother. My father just wasn't there. So that was my childhood. Moved around a lot. I graduated high school in Jamaica at a boarding school. After high school, I came home for about 6 months. After school, my mom had to, I guess, process me out or whatever you want to call it. But I had to come back from foreign country to America, to my parents' house. So my mother's house was my guardian. And I worked at McDonald's, and a recruiter came through the drive-thru twice for breakfast and lunch. And he got me both times at two different McDonald's. I was working at one McDonald's, and then I get off of that McDonald's, I go work at a second McDonald's. So the recruiter saw me twice that day, and he said, "Man, you're working too hard." He said, "You need to come to the military where you work 9 to 5, Monday through Fridays. You get all your benefits, and you have a career, you know, and you can serve your country." And so 18 years old, I thought that was a good idea. So I joined the military. I served for a year and a half in the service. I did special electronic devices repair. I fixed night vision goggles, chemical detectors, mine or bomb detectors. After the military, I moved to New Jersey. I met a really pretty woman, and we had a lot of sex, and we had a baby. About a year after having a child with this person, we got married a year after, and I was married for 2 years with my ex-wife. We got divorced in 2005. I moved to Portland, Oregon back in about 2012. I knew that I needed to be with people who kept it weird, and I needed to be around people who cared about the environment, and people who exercise. I needed to be around tech-savvy individuals, I need to be here. It felt like Portland was the place. I did my research, and Portland seemed like my kind of city. So I came here in 2011 for a week vacation. Just kind of scoped out the place, and then we moved here in 2012. And shortly after moving here, I transitioned from male to female.
Well, thank you for all that.
You're welcome.
Can you share a bit more about what you do as an activist, and are there any projects that you're currently working on?
So as an activist, my two areas of concern are, number one, I'm a person of color, and I work with specifically African-American and POC communities to make sure that we have equality. And then my other area of specific concern is as a transgender woman, transgender people, women and trans men, gender non-conforming people have equality as well. So my mission in general is equality for all people. More specifically are the communities that I'm a part of, the black community and the transgender community, or the LGBTQIA++.
What is it like to be a transgender woman of color in 2017, and how have you coped with the constant attacks coming from 45 and his administration?
The project that's nearest and dearest to my heart right now is a project that's called Independent and United Transgender Women of Rose City. And so that is a transgender gathering. Some people might call it a support group. There was one that I attended for about 2 or 3 years at the Q Center, and I was a facilitator there. We have parted ways, and I've created an organization, a group for and by transgender women. And so I want your listeners to look up and find out about the Independent and United Transgender Women of the Rose City. Another project that I am involved with is I recently did a rally against transgender employment discrimination at the Bureau of Labor and Industries. And it seems like the Bureau of Labor and Industries seems a little complacent. They seem like they feel that the job they're doing right now is good enough. And they don't need to put any more effort in. And my experience is that transgender workers actually get the short end of the stick. We're not getting equal wages. So the second thing that's dear to my heart is the transgender employment equality. And we have reached out to Boley and made 4 demands. One of the demands is for multiple transgender specialists so that they can help fight and identify areas of disparity. One of the demands that we made was for free transgender employment training. One of the demands was for employers to have training so that they don't discriminate and they are aware of what transgender discrimination looks like. Another one of the demands, I believe, was in regard to opportunities, promotions, and equal treatment on the job. We're just not included, to be, you know, quite frank with you, to be absolutely candid. It's really hard for us to get employment, whether employers think that we are a liability because of medical concerns or whether they believe we're a liability because of mental health concerns or whether they think we're a liability because of comfortability that their clients or customers may have or may not have with transgender people. I think employers are very hesitant to hire a transgender person, an openly transgender person. So that's another one of my projects. A third project that I'm working on are the trans-centered events. You recently went to one of my trans-centered events. It was at 1905. I have another one at the Sanctuary and another one at Santi's Bar. And these are events that, so you have heard of gay clubs. You've heard of straight clubs. Well, we're taking, we're just borrowing those clubs for a night. And we're having a trans and intersex-centered event so that people who come to our events know that we have gender non-conforming bodies or non-binary bodies, you know, bodies that don't conform to the gender normative of male or female. And so people who come to our parties don't ask us about our genitals. They know that, you know, things may not be as they appear, but we have a space now in Portland.
So I want to take this opportunity to mention that I did assist to the event and it was a very safe environment. It was like the way it should be. It felt like we were a family, even if we didn't know each other. Like someone else told me, I feel like I'm in my living room. So I definitely recommend these events to anybody out there. I consider myself a gender bender and I definitely recommend it. I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you, Aiden. Appreciate that.
You're welcome. So basically, from what I'm understanding, is those are some of the steps that you've been taking because, maybe not necessarily originally, but because of 45 and his administration, you think that that's one of the ways that we can fight back, one of the ways that we can provide a safe space for everyone?
Yeah, I think the I think all of that's really important. I think the transgender employment campaign is really important so that trans people can live, work, and play. In the city that they love, Portland, Oregon, in the state that they love, Oregon. We have transgender people in East Oregon, in Southern Oregon, and we don't want to forget our brothers and sisters all across the state and really all across the country and the world. So I think employment is really primary. As far as the trans-centered events, that's the play part. We need places that are safe for us to be able to play and be around people that are comfortable with us, whether they're transgender or cisgender, gay, straight, or what have you, as long as we can be comfortable in our skin and it's not like a tutorial. You know, sometimes we just want to be able to go out and enjoy ourselves and not have to explain what transgender means and our genitals and things like that. One project that I'm working on, probably my biggest project that's taking the most energy that I did not mention is it's called TeamWorks. And it's a campaign to house transgender people. It's a real estate campaign. So we can house transgender, gender nonconforming people. We have partnerships within the community with employment and education. So those are the three prongs of the TeamWorks model is education, employment, and housing. We want to take care of the housing so that transgender people can focus on their employment and their education. And we really just want to improve the quality of life all over the world for transgender people. We're going to start here in our community first. Crawl, walk, run. We're going to start slow right here in Portland and take care of the people, our neighbors, you know, the people that we know and see every day right here in Portland first.
That's really good. That's great. I definitely want to hear more about that later. What advice would you give our trans brothers and sisters who are struggling to keep their jobs?
You know, that's a very interesting question. I have a trans woman that is very close to my heart, and she just told me today that she is dead. She said the person that she is has to die because she wants to join the Air Force. And she knows that under 45, openly transgender people can't serve the military. And it's my transgender friends wish to serve in the military. So she's going to detransition
so that she can.
Yeah, it's very sad because the truth is, and I've met a lot of women that have, and I've been one of them actually, that said, hey, I'll just go to work as a boy and then I can do myself, be a woman in my real life. The problem is that when you do that, when I did it, I felt fake. I felt phony. I felt very guarded. I felt like I couldn't really have relationships with people at my job because if they found out who I was, my authentic self, I wouldn't be accepted. I'm a paralegal. I've worked in law firms since about 2008. And since transition, it's been really hard for me to work. I'm full-time transitioned since January 2016. And law firms don't want to touch me because if they do, they have to deal with the clients, the mental health, the medical. And they don't know which one I have, if any of them, but they're not willing to take that chance on a transgender person. And in effect, we are discriminated against.
That's one thing that I noticed too, is that a lot of times they do talk about mental issues. What they don't realize is that a lot of people try to commit suicide because of lack of societal acceptance.
Yes.
Because our society doesn't accept us. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have mental issues. Yes. Yeah. We might be more prone to make decisions that are not the best for us because of all the pressure and all the hate that we have to deal with every day.
It's a lot of pressure, and you're right. And there's a lot of hate and stress. You know, I mean, some of it is blatant. You know, when you're in a store and somebody knows that you're a trans woman and they say, can I help you, sir?
Right, right.
That's very blatant. You know, mm-hmm. when there's a child that's 5 or 3 or 4 and says, are you a boy or a girl? That's not blatant. You know, that's a human being just trying to figure out, I understand a binary system, and you seem a little different.
Right,
you know,
right.
And so, but this is still the weight that a transgender person has to carry every single day.
What it's like to be a transgender woman of color in 2017, how have you coped with the constant attacks coming from 45 and his administration?
Sure. To be very clear and direct with you, what's it like being a transgender woman of color? We know that transgender women of color are unemployed or sex workers. We know transgender women of color are the ones that become on the list for murdered people because of their sex work. We know what happened to Sandra Bland, who was a cisgender woman of color, and the police officers were acquitted. So I think it's a very dangerous place to be a person of color, period. To be a transgender person of color, I think it's even worse. And since 45, with their ban on transgender military, with what just happened in Charlottesville, I think that transgender people in general, but people of color feel very scared, very much on a defensive and worried.
Thank you. What advice would you give our trans brothers and sisters who are struggling to keep their jobs?
That's an interesting one. My advice would honestly be for them to find other transgender people and start nonprofits and businesses and things like that. I would tell them to prepare to lose their jobs. I would tell them that to think that they're going to get a fair shake in 2017, even in the state of Oregon, is not the norm. It's the exception. So if they want to prepare for retirement, if they want to take care of their kids, if they want to have health care, they can't rely on employment. They actually have to rely on either self-employment, getting a trade, starting a nonprofit with some friends, or a for-profit business. I think that the only security for transgender people or people of color, for that matter, is for us to start businesses, for us to start creating opportunities for people within our own communities, because right now those opportunities are not there, and I don't know that they will be there in the future.
Thank you very much. That's very, very good advice. Many of us think that the rest of the LGBT family is next and that they too will start losing their jobs. What do you think we can do to be prepared for the next attacks?
I think that it goes back to the group that I just started, is the independent and unified transgender women of the Rose City. Number one, we are independent. So we have networks of communication between ourselves. Our location is fluid. We can move wherever we want to. Nobody owns us. Nobody tells us what to do. The people in that group decide how that group operates. Secondly, we're united. And I truly believe, which is in the scriptures, which President Lincoln quoted, united we stand, divided we fall. The LGBTQIA+++ community needs to stand together with their people of color communities, with their Native communities, with their Black communities, with their Hispanic communities, with their Asian Pacific communities, with their communities with people that have HIV, with their sex worker communities, with their immigrant communities, with their Mexican communities. I think that we are stronger together. And if we work together, then they can't beat us. But if we isolate ourselves and only work within our tribes, under our flags, lesbians with the lesbians and the trans with the trans, I think that they can beat us that way.
Very easily.
Yes. I think that if we're together and we're unified, I think that we present a united front. I think they don't have a chance. But if they can divide us, then they can conquer us.
Very good point. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Violence against our community in general has increased since 45 was elected. At least 18 transgender people have been murdered this year. Can you share your thoughts regarding this tragedy?
You've given me an opportunity to talk about racism within our own community. I think it's very interesting that we have organizations, community centers, people that present themselves as advocates for transgender women of color. Myself, specifically. We did a rally against the Bureau of Labor and Industries. You're supposed to be on the side of people regardless of their race, religion, ethnic background, sexual preference, and they fired me. And they just paid a settlement of $25,000, not because they didn't do anything wrong. So I think that what we need to do is, as far as the violence, since this person, who I don't want to name, was elected, is that we need to do like those two heroes did on the MAX train. You know, those were two cisgender white males. One of them I know was married. One of them I think had just graduated from college, and another cisgender male had got slashed and cut. And I think that those people need to be raised up because they died doing the honorable thing. I think that we need to create a society where we have our freedoms, but violence is not tolerated. We have to like clearly define the lines, and it's a shame when we have 45, as you call him, driving the ship and spewing hate. And there's a group that I'm involved with, I'm very proud of. They're called Portland Stands Against Hate, and they're very intentional about letting bigots and fascists know that they're not welcomed in this town. And I appreciate those white people. You know, it's a collaborative effort. There's everybody there. But I appreciate those white people in particular that are standing there in between the bodies of immigrants, Mexicans, people of color, transgender people, because they don't want it in their city either.
I noticed that most of the transgender women that have been murdered this year are women of color.
Absolutely.
Almost all of them, a good, like, at least 85% of them. And it's heartbreaking. It really is. And so this is when we have to put our differences aside and work together, like you say, as a community, as human beings.
It's not just this year, actually. They've put together a Trans Day of Remembrance for the women that have been murdered every year. And every year, 75 to 85% of them are African-American and Hispanic.
Yeah.
At times, I have engaged in sex work. You know, I am a marginalized person. I'm a single parent. I'm a person of color. I'm a trans woman. And I have a college degree in paralegal studies. I shouldn't have to do sex work, but I do because the employment discrimination, I think that if we're going to talk about fighting discrimination, I think we need to start at home. And we talk about the subtle races and the things that are happening right here in our community with people that call themselves liberals and Democrats.
You are a parent. What is it like to be a transgender parent?
I'm a single parent. I raise our daughter here in Oregon during the school year, and my daughter flies to be with her biological mother, usually Christmas break and summer break. Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, as a transgender parent, I wish I wasn't transgender, you know, in that context. You know, as a transgender parent, a lot of the weight of being transgender falls on my child. And so at school, she's the kid that has a transgender parent. You know, at sporting events, or the one that has the family that's a little bit different. You know, she doesn't really want me to date because it's a little different. You know, she remembers me as her dad, presenting male. She remembers women looking at me and, like, smiling and saying how handsome I was. But now, since I wear females' clothing, people look with different kinds of looks. It doesn't make her proud. You know, she's not proud of me anymore. And I think most parents want their children to be proud of them. And I know that being transgender in and of itself makes my child embarrassed. She wishes that I wasn't around a lot of times. And it hurts, you know, but I love my child. I know she loves me and we're getting through this together, but it's not easy at all. In a society that doesn't accept transgender people, it's even more cruel, I think, to a middle schooler.
Thank you for sharing that. That was very intimate and very, very heartfelt. Finally, do you have any suggestions for trans and other LGBTQ plus employees who wish to secure their jobs, and what can they do to ensure equality in their workplace?
If we have any LGBTQIA+++ people that like their job or would like the security of regular employment, I think that it's very important to get involved in community service in an organization with people that will have your back. Again, my organization is the Independent and United Transgender Women of the Rose City, and United is an important part of our organization, and I'm sure there's other organizations out there that are united and will go to bat for you. You know, I know that Black Lives Matter, if you can become a member of their organization and work with them, they'll go to bat for you. There's organizations that I've worked with, like Latinx Pride. Sankofa is a pretty decent organization, Two-Spirit Society. These are organizations that I think that HRC, Human Rights Campaign, Basic Rights Oregon, Cascade AIDS Project, those type of organizations, if you get involved with the organization, do your community service, make some friends, build a community. So you can have some friends that can mentor you and have your back if things go south and can vouch for your good character.
I'm going to expand a little bit on that final question and ask you, what do you think they can do within their companies?
Yeah, that's a twofold question. That's really good. I think whether you're transgender, cisgender, non-binary, two-spirit, I think that if you want to excel at a job, I think what you do is excel at the job. I think that you make yourself irreplaceable, that they know that if they hire anybody else, they're not going to get the value that they get with you, that you are so good at your job that they'd be a fool to fire you, and they know that you'd be scooped up by their competitors the next day.
Thank you.
Great. That was fantastic. That was, Aiden, that was your song, wasn't it?
Yes. It's going to be a lot more fun when you actually can see everything else. You know, the song has a very powerful message, and it was inspired by this one time I made a video for Pride, and someone replied with a GIF of like a picture of someone laughing. It was like someone laughing, like making fun of it. So it turned into a graphic called that I did that said "Let them laugh," and then it inspired the song. And I'm like, I wish I knew who the person was that was laughing at me to thank them. Look at what you did, like what you inspired.
That's a great story.
Thank you.
So we have two more guests on the show today, and that was a great interview with Brooklyn Clark. Thank you so much.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
Brooklyn is just amazing.
Yeah.
And Brooklyn has started this new group, Portland Independent and United. It's a group, I think, is it focused on trans women?
Trans this femme. One is, yeah.
Trans femme. But it's like Brooklyn is a great leader, community leader, and Brooklyn gave some great advice in that interview. So definitely check out Brooklyn's new organization. They're meeting, I think, every Friday. So let's get on to our next two interviews. We've got Andrea Haverkamp, who is a member of the Collective, and we're going to talk with Andrea about some labor issues. And we've also got Becca Blackwell. We're very excited to have Becca Blackwell, who is producing a new show that's going to be in town this week. And we'll let you both introduce yourselves. Let's start with Becca. Becca, are you there?
I am. Hi.
Oh, great. Hi, Becca. Thanks for joining us from the East Coast. And sorry about the little time mix up there. So, Becca, can you tell us a little bit about your show?
Yeah, it's called They, Themself, and Shmerm, and it's based off of a weird PR documentary thing I saw about Corey Haim called Me, Myself, and I, and I've been always pressed to make a solo show, which I never wanted to do because I find them rather trite and insane, and, you know, your greatest fear is what you always have to walk through. Yeah, this is great. Sorry, I'm in a cab because I didn't know when you guys were calling.
Oh, that's okay.
We're right here.
Oh, no. The joys of live radio.
Indeed. Yes, So basically I started writing about what I knew, which was just me and being queer and trans and being sexually abused and being adopted. Just one second. Yes.
And so while Becca's talking on the cab, I'm just going to say a little bit about your show. Your show is going to be part of the West Coast premiere. That's the Frontier Series show, and it's going to be in collaboration with Pika. And that's going to be actually, I think it's part of the Artist Rep 2017-18 series. Is that coming up this weekend?
Yes, I think we're on the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Uh-huh. Great. Okay. So tell me, Becca, tell me a little bit about your show. How did you get started? How did you get inspired to do the show?
I'm an actor in New York City, and there's just not a lot of roles. And I've been acting in New York City for 25 years. So it's like I've always had to kind of make a niche for myself, which was incredibly impossible. And it wasn't until, 2 years ago, everyone started being, trans. So I had to start making roles for myself. And that's basically what I started doing. And that's what this show is. It's just, one second. This is perfect.
Sure. So so when you started thinking about creating a show that was dealing with gender identity issues and sexual abuse issues and that sort of thing, were those things that were reflected in your own personal experience?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of what I knew. And I also didn't ever see anyone talking about those things with humor. And I am I was in the circus for 10 years. And it's the only way I know how to deal with stuff is through laughter and making things, and not necessarily making them light, but making them so that I find the humor in them, because I don't know. Part of me is I'm a survivor, and I'm always going to want to try and find the good or the humor in anything, because that's just, I think as a queer people, that's what we've always done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Sorry, go ahead, Aiden.
Sorry, it's all right.
No, I was just going to say that I love that you're talking about laughter, because I always say that laughter banishes fear. If you're ever scared or nervous about something, watch something that makes you laugh. It's a definitely good way to, give you more strength to keep going. We need more laughter in our lives.
Well, yeah, and I think when I heard the tail end of what you just said is what, I'm a practicing Taoist, and only about 3 years in, and it's been very hard for me, but something you just said made very much sense to me, where you said you wish you could have found that person to thank them for laughing at you.
Oh, right, right.
But there is something about that. It's just that always trying to understand that the lessons and experiences we have is something for our spirits to get stronger and kind of evolve in.
Mm-hmm.
And that, but then your chemicals get all sweet and juicy.
Did you get that? Okay, thanks. Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. Are we back on? Okay, great. No, that's okay, Becca. No problem. That's just a little FCC thing. Yeah, no, it's no problem. And I know you're from New York, so probably people in New York, it's a little different, but we're not going to go there. We can't go there because we're over there. But it's okay. Our engineer got it, so we're good. We're really excited to let people know about your show. We've got just a couple more minutes, and we're going to be going to going to our next guest, but just tell us again, when is your show running and how can people find out about it?
It is running September 8th and 9th at 8:30 and 10th and 11th at 6:30. It's at the Artist Repertory Theater. I don't know the exact address off the top of my head.
That's okay.
But I think you can find it through the Pika or TBA Festival website.
Yeah, it's a big festival. It's a lot of fun. And we're so excited that we have the community represented. I know that we definitely, people should check out your show online and learn more about it. And, so thank you. And where can people find you, on social media or on, in other places?
I have a website, BeccaBlackwell.com. And I have a Facebook presence, I guess, that I usually use for performance, because if you try to use it personally, I feel like it makes you go crazy. But yeah, I'm pretty approachable. You can come up and talk to me. I'm not going to shy away from you.
Oh, great. So that's this weekend, September 8th, 9th. And then you've got a couple more shows that's going to be part of the Artist Rep series. It's part of the TBA series, which is a really exciting.
Cool.
10 days of just amazing theater going on in Portland. And here's one that's dealing specifically with gender identity and sexual abuse and things like that, and presenting it with humor and laughter. So,
oh, there's no other way.
Well, Becca, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you
for having me, and thank your engineer for catching all my knots.
Yeah, no, no problem. Thank you, and you have a great night, okay?
You too.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you. All right. So we're also here tonight. We're very happy to be joined with Andrea Haverkamp. Andrea, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, great. Yeah, we can hear you just fine. So Andrea is a regular member of our collective, and Andrea is a special, like a very, just an excellent guest to talk about the topic of our show tonight, which has to do with like trans labor issues. So Andrea, first, can you just reintroduce yourself to the collective and to people over the air so they know who you are?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Andrea Haverkamp. I am a PhD student down here at Oregon State University in Corvallis, and I'm also an employee of Oregon State. And as such, I've gotten very involved with our labor union here. So I am on the executive committee as a vice president of communications at Coalition of Graduate Employees, which is an American Federation of Teachers Union, Local 6069 here in Corvallis, where over 2,000 of us graduate students have come together over the past decade and a half to collectively bargain for our working conditions, our benefits, our terms of employment, and our health care. So that is a little bit of what I do union-wise on top of the work I do with gender and engineering in my professional life.
Oh, wow. That is just really amazing. So can you tell us about some of the issues that trans and gender non-binary, gender non-conforming people face when they're in the workplace in terms of discriminations, and how can they advocate for their rights?
Yeah. So in the workplace, workplace anti-discrimination laws, as patchy as they are across America, do actually very little to prevent the sort of subtle and discreet harassment and misgendering and mistreatment of trans folk. You know, I have a friend here in town, and he was fired for, quote-unquote, we have too many workers. But it was fairly obvious that he was systematically left out, given less hours than his cisgender peers. And, you know, things on top of things on top of things, just for being a trans guy. And that is how it usually looks on the face. Rarely are employees told to their face, I am firing you because you are transgender and I have it here in writing so that you can file a lawsuit. So many of the times it happens under the table. And so here at Oregon State University, you know, we've really tried to acknowledge that other transgender graduate students are subject to the same things that all transgender people are faced to. The rate of poverty for trans people is twice that of the general population, and we have three times the unemployment rate. And it's not that we aren't just as capable and fantastic human beings, you know, it's discrimination. So we have put into place a lot of solidarity and protections within the Graduate Employees Union for all of our members.
Oh, that is just so amazing. Did you have a chance to hear any of the interview with Brooklyn Clark that happened during the first half of the show?
I did. Her interview was amazing.
Oh, yeah. Would you like to comment on some of the things that you heard in that interview?
Yeah. So one thing that she said is sort of as a trans person for survival, oftentimes a college degree might not put you at the same advantage of other people. And, you know, when people have multiple marginalizations in their life at the intersections of race and gender and ability, you know, it can it gets hard to play the game that we hear from conservative pundits all the time, that hard work will get you far in this country. You can work as hard as you want, but when you come up against the barriers of systematic discrimination and oppression, you know, that game doesn't really work. So one thing that I and many other people advocate for is if you can find a workplace with a union, and if you can unionize your own workplace, and you can find those allyships and working groups within your workplace, you have more power than a boss can ever have.
Thank you
when
for
you
saying
collectively,
that.
Yeah, no. So when we all work together in our workplace, we control who's hired and who's fired. We should have democratic control over our workplaces. So it's not just their survival within capitalism, but it is really up to us to, together with all other communities that we are in and that we aren't in, to create solidarity with each other and to challenge the economic capitalist forces that disproportionately marginalize different groups of people.
Yeah, you know, when I was doing some research, I was doing research for this show, I had the opportunity to talk to several people in the trans in our community, and I talked to someone that mentioned that too, like go to your employee and talk to him, or talk to your coworkers as well, and form a union, form a inclusion and equality program within the company that you work for, if it's if it's big enough. And I think, based on what I've learned, is that it really does help to ensure that discrimination and bigotry is not allowed in those companies where those programs are strong. So maybe that's one way that we can work from within, because we also have to work from within, you know, to change what is happening.
Yeah. So if employees here hadn't come together and demanded comprehensive trans health care from Oregon State, a fight that's still ongoing right now, what recourse would an employee have if they were not authorized insurance coverage that was on par with Medicaid here in the state of Oregon? But when you have 2,000 members coming together and demanding equal treatment, gender neutral bathrooms across campus, on top of ADA accessibility, and realizing that the repeal of DACA, all of our dreamer brothers and sisters and friends who have been here since an average age of 6 years old, who might be facing deportation to a country they've never lived in as, you know, since they were five. A lot of those folks are trans too. And a lot of the folks who have faced anti-Semitic violence are trans. And Islamophobic violence are trans. And so that's one of the core principles of the union movement. Up in Portland, the Burgerville Workers Union also shares a lot of these principles. And they're organizing at a place like at Burgerville all across Portland. And that's the sort of action a lot of people associate unions with, some sort of factory job in the 1920s. But unionism is still strong and growing. And so these are conversations to have and to look up and to Google if you don't have a union at your workplace, how you might be able to get resources from the IWW, the International Workers of the World, and see how you and your peers around you can reclaim control over the working space.
Those are such great examples that you bring up. And, you know, Andrea, one of the things you mentioned that I really want to make sure we stress today, because there was just a big rally just right across the river in downtown Portland today, organized by Millennio and Vox Hispana, and it was about DACA. And, you know, just like you said, and I know from working in the community that many of our dreamers are people who are trans, they're gender nonconforming, they're gender fluid, they're also LGBTQ, and they also belong to other like intersectional identities. And what, you know, President Satan has done this today with his minions, you know, his minions from Alabama getting on the air and announcing basically the equivalent of, you know, getting on the air in 1930s Germany and saying that we're going to be sending, you know, people to the work camps. And it's unexcusable. We can't accept it on any level. And I would encourage people to fight this in whatever way they can, because it's, mm-hmm. it's not acceptable to send people, you know, children. We're talking about children who grew up in this country and who have formed the same identities as any other child that has grown up in this country in whatever condition they grew up in. And we're telling them now that they're not welcome here. And we as trans people know what it feels like for someone to tell us that we're not welcome. We totally understand that. And that's why we're doing this show tonight, because we want to talk about that. We want to talk about, how does it feel when trans people are discriminated against in the workplace? How does it feel when trans people are excluded? And how can we fight back? And it's the same fight that we're fighting for DACA.
Yeah.
And in this case, we might be fighting for people who are not only excluded from the workplace, but right now are being excluded from the entire country.
Yeah. And I think you made a lot of fantastic points. And at the end of the day, the government and all of these laws are just as much a social construct as anything else. It is a shared reality that we all co-create together every single day. So that decision by Donald Trump means absolutely nothing if ICE officials, if the Department of Justice, if all these people literally just say, no, we're not going to do that. But it's people's lockstep agreement with a system of laws that were designed to not let women vote, to not let people of color own property, that were allowed slavery. These systems of laws that have slowly churned and changed to allow more people to participate in these systems. It's the lockstep agreement to these laws that we frequently find are unjust. If people didn't start breaking these laws, we wouldn't have had the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the marriage equality movement, and the trans movement. Today at a meeting with President Ed Rae, I was there with other union members, and we had our term meeting with the president of Oregon State. And we mentioned to him, what are you going to do for employees who might be facing deportation out of here? And he said, we're going to do everything possible within the law. And We said to the president of Oregon State, you need to consider not obeying these laws.
Exactly.
Because if everyone obeyed the laws, segregation would still be in place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes people of conscience have to stand up against unjust laws. It's mm-hmm. just, it's one of our responsibilities as human beings. I'm not even going to say Americans, because I don't necessarily believe in America, but it's our responsibility as human beings to stand up against unjust laws. And I think that we in the trans community and people who are genderqueer and gender non-binary and intersex and people of color, we have an instinctive understanding of what it means to face unjust laws, laws that don't allow us to get access to surgeries that we need, laws that keep us from getting access to hormones, laws that keep us out of the workplace, or that even if there are laws in place that are supposed to protect us, aren't enforced. And so mm-hmm. we know what it means to stand up. And so we have to stand up, not just for ourselves, but right now we have to stand up for our brothers and sisters who have had this, you know, terrible, terrible thing happen today that, you know, puts another level of fear in their lives.
Yeah. I absolutely urge other activists out there to, if they don't already, because I know so many people do for the reasons you said, if you are not a member of, if you're not a person who's affected by DACA, it's important that those of us not immediately affected stand up and do what we can and give what support we can to these communities. Because when people come for transgender folks and our rights and our ability to live and to survive and get employment, as they already have with mm-hmm. the military ban,
mm-hmm. exactly.
we need allies who are not transgender or non-binary or non-conforming to stand with us. And if we can't stand in solidarity as Black folk are murdered straight out of their car, and as people are told that they actually don't belong into this country, which was stolen by white colonialists mm-hmm. anyways mm-hmm. from Indigenous people, how, you know, who's going to be there for us? So, you know, as was mentioned earlier, I think Brooklyn mentioned that it's only been within the past few years that people have really been starting to rally and ally and notice the trans community. And I think the spotlight is on us in many ways to show that we have solidarity with other groups, because, again, like you mentioned, I think being at the brunt end of oppression makes you understand those systems of oppression very well. And so we have this privileged understanding that many people really don't understand. That's something really cool about being trans, that we can really lend to our activist communities.
Yeah, and it's very important, like you say, you know, to come together. That's one of the things that Brooklyn talked about too, because, you know, like she said, if the lesbian stays with the lesbians, the gays with the gays, then they'll defeat us. And I think that they'll defeat us really easily that way. But if we all come together, and not just the LGBT community, but, like, you know, you were mentioning, all of these minorities that are being affected by bigotry and by hate and ignorance and fear, if we all come together, we become like a stronghold, and there's no way that they'll be able to tear us down together.
Exactly. Yeah. Totally. If because we work together.
Because the group that's in power in the United States likes to think of us all as minorities. And they use that language a lot, and, you know, it's become commonplace. But when we actually take a step back and we look at folks of color, of women, of folks with disabilities, and of gender variant people, we are the majority, all alive together. We are the majority. And the cisgender, straight, white, able-bodied, conservative, Christian, not that there's anything wrong with that, but those folks, I had someone tell me the other day that he was a straight white man, so he was the default person. No, that's not the default. No. That's just a group that faces much less obstacles towards being in America. And so all of us together, like we're all saying, it's important. So when trans people have our work rights stomped on, we do rely on other folk. Like here at Oregon State University, we rely on our other union members to step up and help us. And that requires that we also step up and help each other.
Yeah.
So, Andrea, we've got just a couple of minutes left in the show. Are there any final points that you'd like to make before we go to our closing?
Oh, gosh, I had one right on the top of my tongue, and then I looked out the window and I forgot. one last thing that I would like to part with is just an acknowledgement of the land that we are on from Indigenous people, that whenever we talk about intersectional movements, we need to remember that when we say decolonization, right, we always hear about decolonizing. Decolonization is an actual literal movement to remove the United States government from control over this land and return ownership and sovereignty and control back to the Indigenous people we stole it from. So at the center of all of these movements, when we look down at the ground, who we are, you know, where we are, I think that that is a movement and a cause and a reality that we just got to keep in the back burner, that America forever should not really be the end goal, right? We're all fighting for survival, but at the end of the day, Indigenous sovereignty is, I think, a much overlooked aspect of activism.
Right. As we always say, you know, at a lot of the meetings I go to, we say that we're sitting on stolen land. Land, and we try to acknowledge, like, the group that this land belongs to. So, Aiden, any closing thoughts?
I just wanted to remind everybody to, even though things are hard, at times it's important not to take life too seriously, as far as, like, you know, going back to laughter and all of that stuff. It's very important. And also to stay together, to really, really work together. There's so many things that have been discussed today, and there's a lot. The main thing is to spread the word. We need to speak out now more than ever. So if you want to help us with that, you know, there's the cable website. We have on Facebook, social media. I have my YouTube channel. It's under Aiden Vargas, V-A-R-G-A-S. And just help us spread the love and spread some love. That this is what we need. We need more people to know the issues that we're dealing with, because a lot of people, believe it or not, still don't know that all of this is happening.
Great. And so just in closing, a couple of things. One is Brooklyn Clark's new organization is Portland Independent and United Trans Women, Trans Femme, and they meet every Friday, I think, at 6 o'clock. And if you want to find out, you can also check out Becca Blackwell's show, They, Themselves, and Schmirm. It's going to be part of Artist Repertory's TBA series this weekend, and you can look them up at Artist Rep Theater to find out more about that. So thank you, everyone, for joining us. Next month, Nicolette is going to be our co-host. She's going to be hosting, and I'm not sure what she's talking about, but it'll be really good. So we'll see you next month. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, everybody.